Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of The Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. For your listening discomfort, those of you who don't like things in the realm of free thinking, or thinking in general, you're not going to enjoy the broadcast, okay? It's not for you. It's not for you. It's for the people who've already figured out that there's something kind of wrong with the planet sort of thing, and they want to be able to talk about these issues
without being yelled at in an angry, scary way, but in a comical way instead.
Now, my very special guest is Danny Bamping, coming in as live from the Uber Kingdom, the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha estate known as England. Welcome to the show.
Evening. Morning.
It's a very early morning for you, and I really must stress to the audience that Danny's sacrificing a lot of sleep to be here tonight, and a lot of his dignity by being on video as well. So thank you very much, and I appreciate it, every pixel. Thank you.
You're welcome, Vinnie. You're welcome. It's good to be on.
Would you be able to explain to me and the audience a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, my name's Danny Bamping. I suppose a bit of an entrepreneur based in Devon in Plymouth, and been involved with a lot of things in the kind of truth freedom movement over the last decade or so. I'm paid a lot of things that normal people pay for a long time, like council tax. Got heavily involved in council tax, didn't pay council tax for 8 years, still not paid it. And other things as well, like water, don't pay for water that falls out of the sky for free. You know, it's a human right, etc. And then got involved with other things such as trying to keep people in their houses, you know, with people getting evicted from their houses after the mortgage scams and stuff like that. And then got involved with trying to help people see their kids going through court process, because I went through all the same things, you see, because when you don't pay your council tax, they made me bankrupt eventually. And it was very public bankruptcy because I'd been on a TV show 4 or 5 years earlier called Dragon's Den. So I went on Dragon's Den years ago, 11 years ago now, with a product called the Bedlam Cube, which was like a 3D Tetris kind of puzzle. Did really well for a few years and then started to kind of like, I don't know, wake up and started with council tax, really. And it went from there, and then they made me bankrupt. Then they came after my house. Then my ex-partner made me go through court to see my daughter and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of snowballed of me helping other people and stuff.
Now, there's a saying by Voltaire, if you want to find out who controls you, find out who you're not allowed to question. Now, can anybody name me a single person who's done either the sovereignty, free man, or straw man thing that didn't get arrested, harassed, or tortured by the authorities, still has their private property, house, boat, car, didn't lose their children or partner, currently has a good life, good work, happy family, has no PTSD or social mental problems? No. Didn't think so.
Right? Well, so I was going to say me, actually, but I didn't really go down the Fremont Road. I started, and then I kind of realised that it wasn't going to work, especially in council tax court hearing where nothing works because there are no rules. But, yeah, and I hear what you're saying because, you know, I tried to get Roger Hayes out of prison by doing a habeas corpus application, you know, after all the events of Birkenhead and stuff like that. And then I got involved with Stuart Hill's Forvic, going up to the Shetland Islands and then creating a little mini kind of micronation and stuff, and became the kind of Forvic's foreign ambassador and diplomat, which is quite mad. And then really got involved with kind of trying to create a new party, trying to look at the way that people vote and trying to look at politics, because there surely lies the answer in some way, because they are the Muppets that are kind of the controllers. So then we started to look at none of the above. You know, a lot of people may remember, you know, Brewster's Millions and stuff, and the idea of none of the above being on the ballot paper. And the thing is that when we tried to register none of the above as a party in the UK, the Electoral Commission turned around and said, oh, no, you can't do that, because the 2005 Electoral Commission Act says that you can't have a party called none of the above party. Like, you can't have put your cross here party, which I thought was kind of genius. So, you know, the thing is that they stopped it. Tony Blair brought that legislation in for a reason, because none of the above is dangerous to the establishment, in the sense that people if they had the option on the ballot paper, would most likely choose none of the above. So then we try to get round it, and the Electoral Commission, we applied to have a party called No Tar, because I'm originally from Bolton near Manchester up north, and No Tar means no thank you. And that's what a lot of people want to say to politics and them lot, is no thank you. So we had the No Tar party, but they wouldn't even let us register that, because they kind of could see what we were trying to do, because No Tar abbreviates to none of the above. And so they didn't allow that. And then we tried to have the No party, and they went, no, stop. We're not going to allow you to have any party with a name No in it, basically. And then it kind of dawned on us that, hold on a minute, let's look at why Parliament was formed, why it was set up. And you look at it, Parliament, and historically, and it was built for the independent candidate. It wasn't built for parties. It wasn't meant for parties. It was built and it operated for 650 years with independent candidates. And during that time, if you look into history, it tells you all the answers that the people really, truly had the power then. They had control of the money. They had the control of the monarchy. Because if the monarchy stepped out of line, it was off with their heads. So really, that kind of fundamental idealism of independent candidates running Parliament was really where it was at, and where people really had some kind of control. And now,
I thought the control came from the people being able to behead the tyrants if they didn't do what they were supposed to. Yet it's kind of like where the rubber meets the road, as it were.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think this is the point, is that at the end of the day, these independent candidates, they didn't really have any masters such as then, you know, because they weren't controlled by the banks, they weren't controlled by corporations and all these people in the background. And so nowadays you've got parties which are all registered with the Electoral Commission. And when you register something, like we know, whether it's your house, your car, your kid, whatever, your company, you're registering, you're giving power to the people that you're registering it to, because you're saying, I'm going to abide by your rules because I'm registered with you. And that's what happens with a political party. The Electoral Commission control what you say, what you do, how much money you raise, who it's from, where you got it from, what you're going to do with it, and all that kind of stuff, because you're a party. And so not being a party and being an independent candidate is where it has got to be at. And that's where really people need to be applying their thought and their vote and the way forward, really, because what if we did have 654 independent MPs in Parliament, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today.
Yeah, because getting them to agree on anything and have a party leader to tell them all what to vote yes on during a conscience vote, it might actually change the way things work. And it reminds me of an idea I had. I'll just tell you a little story. Over the last couple of years, I've gotten to know so many New Zealand activists, right, in all different areas, you know, child kidnapping by the courts and the corruption in the financial system and the pinstripe mafia within the local city councils and so on and so forth. Experts on everything, from health to death. And I think what would be great is that you have all these people who don't actually belong to any party, who don't actually really have any policy, but they all belong to this pseudo-party, and they all run on their own platform with their own reasons and just sit there and just go, bugger it. We know that at least everybody who's a member of this party doesn't take any crap, and they've been vetted and they're all activists. They might say some really crazy things, but they've got facts to back it up. Now, that seems to be what would create any kind of independent structure. That model, but actually an entire nation. It's not just a rebellion movement. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's the idea of no party, is to create a non-legal physical entity, or not, you know, non-physical entity, a bit like Anonymous, really, but for the political scene, and focusing on not voting for a party. Voting, like you said, for independent candidates who have got their own agenda, but at the same time trying to create an umbrella movement which is global, applies in America, like it applies in New Zealand or Australia or the UK, or even right around Europe. Even in America, somebody can stand as an independent candidate up against Democrats and Republicans, same as they can do in Canada, in New Zealand, in Australia. So all around the world, people can stand as independent candidates. And it's not just as MPs, it's as local councillors, police crime commissioners, members of the European Parliament. All these different facets always have the option of having an independent candidate. And that's really what we're trying to create, is a voice, a global voice, to be able to people lock into, oh, no party, well, you don't vote for a party then. But in, and we've got slogans like, no party will free Parliament, and there's no party worth voting for, and all that kind of stuff, you know, and it really, it works really well.
I came up with one just before the show today. I said, no party will solve all the world's problems.
Well, there you go. Perfect. You know, it has so many connotations, and branding-wise, it's perfect. And we do exactly what it says on the tin when we don't vote for a party.
Now, I was just thinking of a crappy joke along the lines of, when I was in university, you know, when you're getting educated, there's the work that you do by yourself and the studying, etc., and then there's the partying that you do, which winds up being the bulk of the time that you actually enjoy at university. Now, unfortunately, when you're part of a party, not a whole lot of work gets done, right? And the same is true of Parliament. They're not getting any work done. They're just at the party all the time.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think the other thing is, when you're a member of the party, you are controlled by a whip and you've got to toe the party line. And, you know, they want you to vote for Trident and nuclear weapons. Then you've got to vote as the party wants you to vote. You can't have this independent thought or actually represent the true kind of desire and intention of your constituents that you're representing. And they're not even thinking like that. They're voting it as like a pack of wolves, if you like. And those pack of wolves are controlled by the people that fund them, which is the banks and the corporations, which keep, you know, change the legislation and kind of lobby, you know, to change things. And this is where everything kind of interlinks and overlaps with the parties being funded by the people that want certain things. And there's something in UK legislation which is called the Remembrancer. And not a lot of people actually know that there's somebody in Parliament called the Remembrancer who's been there since the banks took over, who is there to make sure that nobody in Parliament or the Parliament itself does not pass any legislation that may hinder or hurt the banks. That Remembrancer, that person, is unelected. It's the only unelected member of Parliament. And the Green Party, in their last manifesto for last year's general election, were the only party to put in their manifesto, we would get rid of the post of the Remembrancer. Because they're there for the City of London, for the Crown, to make sure no legislation is passed that may harm the Crown.
Now, the Crown is a corporation, in fact. In the New Zealand context, it's called the Queen and Right of New Zealand at the Securities and Exchange Commission. So, yeah, it's a corporate entity, isn't it? Right, yeah. So that means all of us are assets of a corporation. That would make us stock, and because we're alive, that makes us livestock.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
Being farmed.
Exactly, and it's all based in the City of London, who the Queen needs permission to go into from the mayor and all that kind of stuff if she wants to go into the City of London through Temple Gate. And so there's all that stuff going on because the City of London is a different sovereign entity and holds all the world's banks headquarters and stuff, and nobody actually pays tax, and that's where the media is based and all this control and stuff. At the end of the day, you know, who is the Crown, or what is the Crown? A lot of people can't answer.
Well, the Battle of Waterloo was a very important move because back in the day when intelligence agencies were only just being set up, professional ones, they were being used by royal families and wealthy families of Europe to spy on important events because important events affect the stock market. And I think one of the Rothschilds, it might have been Nathan de Rothschild, I think, got word of the Battle of Waterloo outcome where the British won a full 24 hours before the royals did. And so he was like, that's going to make our stock market go right up. Now, everybody knows that I've got a real good intel network, better than anybody, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the classic, mate. I'm going to pretend and act, but without saying, that we lost the Battle of Waterloo. And then the stock market started to crash, right? And he starts buying up all of it on the pennies of the dollar. And then the next morning, the news came in that we won and the stock market inflated back up again and he owned England.
It's kind of like, isn't there a modern day version of that around 9/11? I'm sure there is. you know, and it's probably the same a few months ago or so with the Brexit thing, you know, that it's all kind of sculptured and already kind of pre-planned. But at the end of the day, they're trying to break that mold, trying to come up with a new way of voting, because that seems to be the only way that we do have a voice. And I think the other thing is with the Brexit thing is really interesting, because I think a lot of us really felt like all the other elections, it was going to be rigged. We were going to stay in. But I think what happened is maybe everybody took their pens rather than their pencils, and maybe the vote had actually counted this time.
Well, that is a theory, because as far as I've heard so far from the authorities, they go, oh, well, you know, it's actually a bit more complicated to get out of this than we thought originally. We're going to delay it a couple months, eh? And I guarantee you, in a couple of months, they'll go, well, you know, it's even more complicated than we thought. We're going to have to delay it another couple of months. I was just like teasing people. I was like, oh, you thought that the ruthless criminal sociopaths that carefully, gradually, over time, brought up the European Economic Community and then eroded away all your liberties were just going to let you get out of the tyranny all of a sudden because you voted on it. Aren't you precious? I think that was my cynical take on it.
Well, absolutely, but then you could be even more cynical and say, oh, it's by design, and they wanted us to come out, and they rigged the vote to make sure that we did, and that means that Cameron has left and all the other monkeys have left, and now we're left with all the lovely women taking over with Merkel and May and now Clinton, you know, and you start to look at the world stage and think, hold on, what's happening here? But yeah, it's some interesting times. But I think going back to the point of no party and, you know, the website, is that we've had somebody come forward from New Zealand and want to run a kind of arm of no party over in New Zealand. Same with somebody in Australia, and now somebody in India, somebody in America. And now it's started to grow some roots and stuff, which is kind of cool, because that's what we need to do, is get this idea out of not voting for a party. And I think that if a lot of people did that, then we'd have a much better kind of system in place. And certainly, you know, something that's happening in a local level down here in Devon and Cornwall is really interesting. So many people are getting fed up with their parties, even on a local level, that they're having these mini coups, if you like, where there's going to be some local elections soon, and some of these people are going to step aside from being members of a party, and they're going to stand as independents. They're going to do it at the last minute, so that that party struggles to get somebody appointed as somebody to stand on their behalf in that seat. And so, yeah, it's really kind of a structured coup, really, you know, to see if we can take over local councils so that they're purely independent.
Now, it says that if you can't beat City Hall, become City Hall, right? If there is a possibility of that, because I think you've tapped into something that I believe maybe about 2-3 years ago, I thought this was probably one of the most important veins in the emergent awakening of humanity, is this overwhelming feeling of cynical indifference, right? People who have hope to change, people who want something to change, but they are very, very jaded, because they know that 99.999% of the time when somebody comes out and gives you hope and gives you change, it's BS, and they manipulate you. That, hence the cynicism. That needed to grow, that cynicism. You needed to see a couple of elections and be betrayed a couple of hundred times in a row by varying authorities before you'd even have any inclination that you should give up on the party system and the current system of politics in its entirety, right? It took a while for that little gem to gestate, I think.
Yeah, it did. And I think, you know, last year's general election was a good example of it all kind of starting to fall apart, especially for parties like the Liberal Democrats, which virtually don't exist anymore. And then you've had UKIP come along, and they were their one-party kind of manifesto of, we've got to leave the EU. And now we've had a referendum, which has kind of like been the pin that burst the balloon, really, because UKIP is kind of dissolving in front of our eyes because they've kind of got their wish. And Conservatives are kind of just keeping it together, even though the captain left the sinking ship. And then they started to think about, oh, should we have a leadership contest? And then they all drop like flies to leave Theresa May. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the Labour Party, which is kind of internally combusting with this leadership contest now between Owen Jones, or whatever he's called, and Jeremy Corbyn. And this is the thing, is that all this media attention, all this energy is focused on all these, who's leaving which party, and it's all about party politics. And they always say controlled opposition. It's because they're all controlled, and it's all parties, and that's what we need to kind of fragment and dispelled, but we've had this kind of ingrained brainwashing since with birth of we must vote for blue, red, green, or whatever, you know, and this is why the colours of the No Party are black and white, you know, so our website is black and white, all our marketing material is black and white, and all our policies, ideas and ethics are very black and white, because it's dead simple, really, when you think about it. We know that 95% of the population don't want nuclear war. So why are we putting billions into going to fund nuclear wars and stuff, or funding Trident as some kind of deterrent where we're going to use it after we're dead? It doesn't make sense. And that's why I think that there's millions of people out there who are in this kind of hamster wheel of going round and going to a job 9 to 5, looking after the kids, paying a mortgage, and not really breaking out of that shell and looking out of that window. What's going on? Who owns stuff? Where's the money created? You know, who's in charge of the politicians and all that kind of stuff. They're not asking fundamental questions. They're more concerned about what's happening in EastEnders or what the football score was.
I do think that is the case. What was it Churchill said? He said, the best argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with the average voter. And time has proven him even wiser than we could have fucking imagined. Like, it's like the IQs just drop sharply at some point, right?
What are they putting in the water?
Oh, my God. I feel like I've come out of some kind of frozen time capsule in an Aliens movie and just find, like, a group full of suits with, like, half brains and stuff like that out of Idiocracy, and they're flying around in spaceships made out of cardboard and duct tape. Fuck me.
Well, it's a good point about the water. What do they put in the water? Well, they put fluoride, zinc, carbon, you know, all sorts of stuff in there. And, you know, that's one of the kind of, like, storylines for V for Vendetta, isn't it? That's where it all started, was some kind of pollution in the water supply.
It was the St. Mary's virus. It was put in 3 different public places where you've got no motive to have any kind of terror attack, right? Yeah. To maximize public impact and to use the fear to get people to give up their liberties and install dictatorial power for a government. You know, how do the writers come up with this stuff? You know?
Well, it's a good point, though. It's a good point because, you know, water is a good issue because I've not paid my water bill for the last 8 years. And, you know, this water falls from the sky for free on a regular basis, even in the summer in the UK. And it's a human right. No domestic property can get cut off under European law. There's a case law called Griffin versus Southwest Water 95, which basically states, after going to European court, that Mr. Griffin could not sue his water company, Southwest Water, because it's deemed an emancipation of the state, which basically means it's a debt collector. And it may supply you with a water service, it doesn't own the pipes, it doesn't own the water, and it's not liable. So if it puts arsenic or chloride or fluoride or anything in your water supply, you cannot sue the water company, because you can sue the government via the Department of Health, but you can't sue the water company. And so why would anybody in their right mind pay for a human right that's freely available to everybody, falls out the sky for free? I mean, if somebody walked around with a big bag of fresh air saying, here, quick, you need this fresh air to live, buy it off me for $10, do you really think that people are going to buy that fresh air? Maybe in Korea and stuff, but not in the Western world.
Well, I don't know. Air pollution in New York's pretty shocking, you know? If you come up to somebody with a big volcano vaporizer bag of fresh air, they might be keen.
Maybe wrong.
The other thing I wanted to... Here's the thing. In a completely dumbed-down society that's been raised from birth to be obedient, dependent slaves, essentially, domesticated livestock, if you will, then the likelihood of them becoming independent or thinking or questioning things becomes dramatically reduced. And I think that's the very idea. But not only that, when you do start to question things, all the other people around you who are still domesticated will attack you for not acting like them. It's the social programming and brainwashing that we've all been subjected to. And I apply the shorthand. How do you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you're under mind control. Right? It works. Yep. It's so thoroughly enveloping the entirety of our society. Now, coupled with that, there's the distraction. So you can stop people from thinking by occupying their time or occupying their mind with something else. The human minds, we respond to colours. We respond to shifts in shadows in terms of the eyesight. In terms of the brain, we respond to imagery. Sexual and violence tend to be the big zones that get activated. Now, if you were, let's say, I don't know, some kind of ruthless brainwashing scumbag, and you had more money and power than God, and you owned a whole lot of the media, and you wanted to use the global media as an effective tool to distract people from having any independent thought or really time to think about things thoroughly, would you by chance flood every airwave in every conceivable way with stupid people talking about irrelevant crap, really violent stuff, or really highly sexualized stuff?
I'm not just for.
This is for just allowing you to live your own evil life without really having a terribly large amount of problems from people thinking too much.
That's the key point, isn't it? Is people critically thinking for themselves, thinking outside the box and stuff. You know, for years, I run a successful company, paid all my bills, mortgage, water, gas, electric, TV license, the whole works. And then suddenly I kind of woke up out of the kind of matrix, if you like, and went, hold on a minute. Why am I paying for water? Why am I paying to watch TV? Why am I funding paedophiles? Why am I paying for my mortgage when it was generated out of fresh air and paying interest on nothing? Why am I paying for electric when it should be freely available and all this kind of stuff? And council tax, which is the biggest fraud of all, that was one of the first things to go. And so from my perspective, I completely shut down, went from one side of the fence to the other and cancelled all my debits overnight. Apart from my mortgage, which I changed to a standing order from over £1,000 a month to £1 a month to a standing order. And I paid £1 a month for 3 years on my mortgage, and I still didn't get evicted, unlike people like Tom Crawford and stuff who did. But this is the thing, is that I didn't get evicted because I kept in honour of any alleged financial contract, because I paid something every month. Therefore, the computer never black flagged me on their computer system, but I was 44 grand in arrears. And at the time, I was bankrupt. But the Circuit Judge Cotter in Exeter, who also 2 years ago found Theresa May in contempt of court, he made sure that I kept my house because I argued that I believed it was a contract, but it was actually an agreement. And you can change an agreement every month. And because they'd have accepted my pound, therefore they'd accepted my change of agreement every month. And what eventually happened, they consolidated the 40-odd grand arrears into my mortgage, and now I'm in a position where I can remove the possession order. And I've helped a lot of people keep their houses that way by just making sure they pay a quid.
Well, that's quite ironic, really, being upfront with your arrears.
Yeah, absolutely. Outstanding balance, as they say. And this is the thing, is that what happened next is that...
You could have been a financial acrobat, mate, with an outstanding balance like that.
Yeah. And this is the thing, because I stopped paying my council tax so long ago, what I did was, at the time, I put all my assets that I had at the time into a private family trust. So I made sure that my daughter, who's now 7, was the equitable long-term beneficial owner of all that stuff, including my house. And what happens is, when they made me bankrupt, they tried to unravel that trust, but the too much time, 3 years, more than 3 years had spanned, so they didn't get anything out of my bankruptcy apart from my unsecured debt. And at the end of it, I then registered with a local university and became a law student. So the last 3 years I've been doing a law degree, and students are exempt from council tax. So I've been exempt from council tax for the last 3 years, which has been beautiful. And now I'm in the process of taking legal action against the local council for making me unlawfully bankrupt in the first place. So it's a nice little circle that's gone on, and I'm in the process of kind of writing a book, because what I feel like I've been through has been like a human guinea pig of what happens to you when you don't pay your bills.
And there's a lot of people who aren't going to be able to pay their bills soon enough when the economy gets crashed again. And then the bail-ins happen, and all of the people who had money, who actually would survive the financial crash, get all their money taken directly out of their bank accounts to bail out of the banks. There's going to be a lot of people who might be interested in that book, but they won't be able to afford it, so we'll put it on free as an ebook for you.
I probably will put it on free, yeah. But I think the thing is that, going back to the money, which is the key point here, is that if independent candidates were in power, then maybe they'd get rid of the remembrancer, and maybe they'd also take control of the monetary policy of the UK. Because this is the one thing that people don't realise, is that this government, like most governments, around the world do not have control of their monetary policy. That is left with the national banks, which the Rothschilds are in control of, the IMF and the Federal Reserve and the World Bank and all that stuff. So what people need to realise is that if the governments were in control of their monetary supply, everything would be a lot easier and a lot better. We wouldn't need taxes for a start because we'd be able to create as much money as we needed. But at the same time, it's the equivalent of not having their finger in the pulse of the monetary supply, and they've got their finger on the pulse of the fiscal policy, which is the interest and all that kind of stuff and inflation. So they've got their finger on the pulse of the fiscal policy, but not with a monetary supply. And that really is the equivalent of driving a car and somebody's got their hand on the wheel and somebody else has got their feet on the pedals. And like you said, it's the only inevitability is going to be a financial car crash scenario, which when resets the world's local currency and everything kind of goes a bit Pete Tong. Which is why I think one of the things Britain is doing around certain cities in Britain is creating local currencies like the Bristol Pound, Exeter Pound, Brixton Pound, Totnes Pound, Liverpool Pound, and soon there'll be a Cornish Pound and a Plymouth Pound where I live. And so these local currencies are great, but the problem is they're just vouchers which are connected to sterling. So if sterling does collapse, the local currencies have collapsed, which doesn't make sense. So I'm trying to create something, because I'm involved with creating the local currencies as well, especially Plymouth and Cornwall, where the currency is not just the actual physical notes or the digits or whatever, the, you know, digital things, but it's actually time and people's energy and, you know, people connecting on a kind of social media kind of platform so that they can exchange energy, because that's all money is a representation of an exchange of energy, exchange of value. And my electrician came around the other week and did 50 quid's worth of work. You know, at the end of it, I went to pay him and he said, hold on a minute, I need some legal advice. I gave him some legal advice. One of his customers who hadn't paid him, and they turned around and said, you know what, forget the 50 quid. And that's really where we need to be at, that level of my time is worth your time and we can help each other. We really don't need monopoly money to kind of shove around in people's hands and stuff, because that's what it is. It's all IOUs created by their system. That's what governments need to do, is get an actual government, you know, which represents the people's interests, which would be for the government to be in control of the money supply. And they're not in control of this money supply. And that really is the core of the problem. And that really is the core of the control. Because like Ford said, whoever controls the money doesn't care who makes the laws.
Now, you and a number of other guests that I've been speaking to over the thing have talked about these very foolish pieces of legislation and things of this nature, and this phrase keeps coming up, it just doesn't make any sense, it just doesn't make any sense. And I've been pondering on that phrase, and I was like, no, I disagree. It makes total sense if you're a criminal psychopath that is standing to gain from the really stupid legislation you're passing.
Absolutely, and that's why they took out people like Saddam Hussein when they did, and also Gaddafi, because Gaddafi was going to try and create the gold dinar, which was going to be this currency in the Middle East.
And then he got denied.
He got denied doing it, yes, he got denied from doing the dinar. But now somebody's bringing out an e-dinar, which is going to be kind of a crypto Bitcoin currency, which is, again, something that the establishment and they can't control. And this is the problem, with same with the internet and freedom of speech. And all these things are kind of giving them problems. And also people picking up on what's a false flag and what's not a false flag. I mean, that's been really interesting. 10 years ago, a lot of people didn't know what a false flag was. I think 9/11 really was the ultimate one. But you look at them now and they're happening every other week, especially in Europe. And people are waking up to that. And that wasn't there before. And that's a good thing. That people are kind of waking up to, hold on a minute, where did my mortgage come from? Hold on a minute, why am I paying my water company? I go to court for council tax and there's no rules. You know, I went in there. I went and asked, excuse me, what rules are we under? Well, we don't know. I mean, this is how ludicrous it is. And this is the thing, is that I've kind of specialised in council tax with others who are on the verge of really breaking it apart for what it really is, which is the poor law jurisdiction and the poor law in operation and getting jailed for a civil debt which you owe the government via a statutory obligation. And really, when you look at that, you're jailed as a civil prisoner, you're jailed under a civil jurisdiction, yet when you go in the court and say, excuse me, can I ask where the rules are for today's hearing and this procedure, and what law are we under, and what jurisdiction are we under, they can't answer those questions. And that's how nuts it is, even in 2016 in the UK today.
That sounds pretty freaking crazy.
What it is that it's a non-HMCTS hearing. HMCTS is Her Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Service. And what happened years and years and years ago with the monarchy is that Henry VIII brought in something called the Courts of Quarter Session. And that gave the power to his barons on a local basis through their local councils to tax their subjects. And if they didn't pay, then they were forced to go into jail. And that poor law was in operation, and it meant they had to be in jail or they had to be in a workhouse, and they had to pay their debt to society. And 44 years ago, they brought in an act called the 1971 Courts Act, which abolished courts of quarter session under King's Privy Council. However, when somebody gets jailed now for council tax in Britain, those laws and that enactment and those processes, they're all there in a disguise. Well, they're not even disguised, really. It's there for you to see. And when people get jailed, like a guy got jailed recently for 180 days, where the maximum should be 90 days, and he owed about $4,000. And his bill is being paid by someone somewhere, or it's just being deducted at £50 a day for every day that he's in prison. So when he comes out, he owns nothing. So this is the way that I put it to the warden when I tried to kind of get his details so I could apply to the High Court and write to him and say, I want to get this guy out of jail. And he explained to me, well, it could be problematic because he's a civil prisoner and you can only get a legal visit if I approve that and all this kind of stuff. And the ultimate thing was I said to him, look, he's in a place where he's got maximum security. He's meeting lots of interesting people. He's got free board accommodation. He's getting fed well. He's got free use of a library and a gym, and he's getting paid £50 tax-free, effectively, every day that he's in there. So I said, fuck it. I'm not even going to apply to the High Court. I'm going to leave him there. What else better situation could you be? £500 to the taxpayer in Britain is paying for that man to be in prison, but he's there because he didn't pay tax. It's like an ironic oxymoron. It's nuts, and it's against our human rights. It's against our constitutional rights. And it's against international law.
That is a almost word-for-word account of what's happening with a local New Zealand activist, Penny Bright, who's disputing and refusing to pay her council rates. And she's only doing it because under the Local Government Act, they're required by law to show what they're doing with your money, how much of your money they're collecting and where it's going. And they do not provide any information of that thing to do with the private contracting and all of these criminal mafia scum that are running all of these private contracting companies.
What a surprise.
So she's going, well, I'm going to dispute and not pay my rates until you hold up your end of the bargain. My end of the bargain as a citizen is I have to pay my rates. Your end of the bargain is you have to follow the law. You're breaking the law. I have a moral obligation to not pay my rates. Sorry. And the law's on her side.
Absolutely. And this is the thing, is that a guy in the UK got jailed last year called Chris Coverdale. I tried to get him out of prison and he didn't pay because he believed that his council tax was going to fund illegal wars and pay for cluster bombs abroad and stuff like that, which no doubt it is. And I know other people have been jailed as well because 40% of council tax goes to the council's pension pots. And so we're topping up their pensions with our taxes. And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And like you said, that lady is making a stand because they're obligated as public servants to declare what you're doing with that public tax raised money and where you're spending it. And when they don't declare it, means they're spending it where it shouldn't be spent, which is why they don't declare it. Because if they did, the game would be up. So it's far easier to pick that nice lady who's obviously got some balls, metaphorically, hopefully.
She definitely does. Unbelievable woman. She's running for mayor, actually.
Good independent candidate, no doubt.
That's right. Here's the problem with Auckland local government politics. It's the largest city in the country by a 30% margin. Like, the next largest city is down here, right? And so it's the biggest import where most of our new immigrants come in, because it's the warmest and largest place, really. And it's also the fact that we've got $40 billion worth of public assets, more than any other bloated council in the country, the country's largest port. It's a massive strategic asset in terms of the South Pacific region. Now, I think that a whole bunch of incredibly wealthy plutocrats have figured this out, that if you want to control the infrastructure and the strategic resources in countries, all you need to do is pay off the local council so that they start privately contracting out your services to you, and you control those resources for tens and twenties and thirties of years, right? And that is beautiful, because not only do they get to control that asset and not have to really answer to anybody, but they also get to keep getting paid for all the work that they make up that needs to be done. So it's a perfect circle of control and profitability, and the only people who miss out is everybody.
Well, and that's how they like it, isn't it? That's exactly how they like it. And this is what Stuart Hill was doing with Forvik, with Micronation in Shetland, because Shetland is a really strategic place because of the oil and the wealth up there in the North Sea. And really, Shetland is actually, or was, or still is, owned by Norway. It's Norwegian territory. And the thing is, from that perspective, it never became part of Scotland. They just kind of nicked it. And so this is why Stuart made the argument that his island was a micronation and it wasn't under their jurisdiction, because Shetland never became part of Scotland. But they made it part of Scotland because of the oil, because of the wealth. And like you just said, with that example, everything therefore goes in a big circle, and the people that miss out is, well, everybody apart from the 1%, again, a bit like the people who own the banks who create the money out of fresh air. And this is the thing, is they do create the money out of fresh air, and even people today don't realise that. They go to work for their sweat equity, for their £7 an hour or their £700 an hour or somewhere in between, and they don't realise that they're giving up their time for something that somebody else has created out of fresh air. Simple as that.
It's sleight of hand, essentially. We're in a global position now where the biggest gambler at the table has gambled quite well, and they've got the biggest stack of chips on the table. And now they're thinking about, we've already stolen half of what's on the table. It's going to be much easier now to get the other half, isn't it?
Well, what they say, it's not the cards you were dealt with, it's how you play the hand. And this is where the whole of the rest of us, the majority, the rest of humanity, have got to get together and kind of kick everything into touch and stuff, or at least try to have some kind of fight back. And that's what is really clearly happening now. And I think Gandhi said it best with doing it with civil disobedience. Is the peaceful civil disobedience is the best way forward. And that's really what we should be doing. That's certainly what I've been doing over the last 6 or 7 years, and I will continue to do so. I can't see me paying for water ever again. Just psychologically, it's gone. You know, I'll never pay for water again. Why should I? It's falling out of the sky for free. Council tax is enforced by a 40-year-old law that has been obsolete. So therefore, why should I pay council tax? It's fraud at its best. And this is the thing about the No Party, is bringing together some ethics and bringing together some logic about really ideas. They can't be policies. They can't be pledges. Because we're not a party, we're just a kind of umbrella for the independent political voice, and for there for really members, because you can join, you know, it doesn't cost anything to join, but you can donate as well. But we're not a party, you know, it's a movement for the independent candidate. But what we've done is our members have voted for those ideas. The top 10 ideas you'll see on the website, noparty.co, is basically the 10 ideas that were voted for by the members. So in a way, the kind of ethics and the principles put forward by the umbrella organisation are mini referendums by its own membership. And, you know, there was a good politician or aristocrat called Sir James Goldsmith years ago, and he brought out something called the Referendum Party. And there's a great YouTube video of a VHS that he sent out to millions of people years ago. It cost him a fortune. But it was a really good idea that challenged the norm in political process of having a party there that let the people decide 2 or 3, 4 times a year on the big main issues, whether it was to go to war, renew Trident, come out of Europe, take over the banks, or Scotland become independent. Whatever these big questions are, there should be a referendum so that the people decide, like there was recently with Brexit, which I think was a great process, and it was a very close 48 to 52 vote. So it just shows that real democracy can work when it's allowed to.
I will believe that once they actually exit the EU. In the meantime, I'm still in the limbo. It's like, you ever been in a relationship or a friendship with somebody and they've let you down freaking constantly, and there's the one time where you think they're going to make it through, but you're sitting there quietly grinding your kind of fingernails and your teeth at the same time, just going, this person's still a fuck up, aren't they?
Yeah. Or you get those people that come to you all the time for, like, you know, can you give me legal advice? And then you give them, you know, your opinion, and they don't take it. And I call those people assholes, you know? And this is where it's at, is that, you know, at the end of the day, you can give people knowledge, but you can't make them think. You know, they've got to kind of do that for themselves. And people are waking up every day to what's going on around them and stuff. And, you know, one of the things that we put forward is this idea of the 1% kind of Robin Hood tax. There should be a 1% tax on every electronic financial transaction. Because if that happened in today's society, we would raise more taxes than ever before. And there would be no cost to raising those taxes because it would all be electronic and you would never notice it. Everybody could just get on with stuff and we'd have a massive pot of money to play with. But they go through all this kind of loopholes and this keep creating this world of austerity and usury, because that's what it really is. It's usury, keeping everybody in that debt slave society. And until we break out of that mold, really nothing fundamental is going to change.
So basically what you're saying is that the current laws that are actually in place to stop fraud and et cetera should actually just be enforced. Because I think that's the problem that we've really got here. There's no actual problem with what's on paper, right? What's on paper is fine. You've actually learned this yourself and you've proven it yourself, haven't you? You've managed to use what's on paper to get you out of this. The only thing we need is the thing that's actually on the paper to be freaking followed. Do you have any idea what life would be like if the government actually did what they said that they had to do? If laws actually meant what they said that they meant? If judges actually did the job that you're supposed to do as a judge? You know, these kind of simple things. Oh, a peace officer. Is your job to go and ruthlessly bash people for no fucking reason? No? Because you're a peace officer? Well, I guess that solves that problem, doesn't it?
Well, you're exactly right. I think maybe there's not so much more wrong with the system, but more with the people that are running the system because they're not following the rules. Like, you know, the Bill of Rights is still legislation today and the Magna Carta is still in force. But do they follow any of those things? Do they take them into consideration? Do they? No. They just dictate.
Have they ever read them?
Well, exactly. They just do what they're told to do, you know, to keep the norm. That's why nobody will win a mortgage case in the UK or probably in America or even any Commonwealth or common law country, win a mortgage case against mortgagor, because it would create a floodgate rule where somebody could go into court and use the case law and suddenly get out of their mortgage. That's never going to happen. That's why people like Tom Crawford and other people like that were barking up the wrong tree when they were trying to save their house going through the court process when there was no remedy.
Danny Bamping is my very special guest from noparty.co, and I don't know how he got that one, bro, but that's great. www.noparty.co, bro. And it's not got the bro on the end. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com as well and start donating, ladies and gentlemen, regularly, monthly. There is a little button there. You can start making $1.50 a week, $2.50 a week, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you feel like giving. If you like exposing scumbaggery, if you like really, really, really terrible puns that are just shocking, then donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, please. And also to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back after the break with Danny Bamping. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's on AmericanFreedomRadio.com a couple nights a week for your listening pleasure. And also there are archives on American Freedom Radio, ladies and gentlemen. If you didn't manage to catch the show live, go to the archives page on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and download those as well. And if you appreciate the ability to download well-edited, beautiful quality audio archives, of some of the finest hosts in the alternative media, with some of the greatest guests on the international circuit, then give them a few dollars to thank them for the many, many hours of enjoyment and fulfillment that this website and the people who run it grant you. Pay it forward, ladies and gentlemen. Don't pay it back. That's the council's freaking way of doing it. Anyway, my very special guest is Danny Bamping over here from the Uber Kingdom, the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha Regiment. Welcome back.
Cheers, Vinny. It's good to be here.
Sir Francis Bacon, he created the legal system and the court system as we kind of know it today in the Western world. And that's why I'm not afraid of it, because I eat bacon for breakfast.
Well, I don't know a lot about kind of the history of who created all the law stuff. I just know that for the last 3 years I've been studying it and I've finally passed my law degree, which has kind of, I don't know, helped me and helped me in a better position now to have a greater understanding of where really I can apply my knowledge and help people really. And this is the other thing about MPs is that 70% of them are legally trained, you know, and that's one of the things that people don't realise, that a large majority of MPs are legally trained.
Another thing a lot of people don't realise is that psychopaths love positions of power and control over other people, and they traditionally cluster in law, medicine, politics, entertainment, and religion.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, absolutely. And this is the other thing, is that people in those positions tend to be practitioners or practicing. You know, when you go to the dentist or lawyers, and there's always a doctor's practice or whatever, or everybody's practicing. They're all practicing because they're all insured, you know, and they're not really doing it for real, because if they were, you could sue them, but you can't sue them because they're insured. And so that's why they're practicing. So they're practicing on you.
Just like the pharmaceutical industry, when they only do two rounds of tests on the psychotropic drugs that cause murder suicides. Isn't that an interesting one? Not only can you make your victim kill somebody else, but you can make them kill themselves so that they can't survive to testify against your drug that made them do it.
So that's how they've been doing the false flags.
Brilliant.
So that's how they do the false flags then, is it? That makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is the thing, is that these things are out there and people really are kind of immune to it, or just kind of don't really know it goes on and don't know it exists, or think people are some kind of conspiracy theorists if they do believe that it exists. And the majority of people really are in that, still that hamster wheel, and they haven't got a clue because they're not looking outside the box at what's really going on. You know, and I questioned the recent Paris Nice false flag, if you like, with the truck. And had a conversation with close family friends who were saying, what do you mean all those people died, Danny? You can't question that. I was like, well, show me a picture with the truck with some blood on it, okay? And also, you know, have a look at a truck that has hit, say, a deer, you know, or an elk or something, you know, or even a rabbit. You're going to find blood on them, and it's supposed to run all those people over, and, you know, and then you look at the videos and it seems to be all mannequins rather than actually human people been run over, or these actually mannequin stuff with tomato sauce, because the video's too grainy, and now they're taking all away the CCTV just to make it even more obvious. And I think more and more people are waking up to these events and thinking, was that real? Did that really happen? Or is that done for a reason to kind of push some agenda somewhere, to put us in this state of fear and create some kind of new kind of gun legislation so that they can have even more control over it?
And take the guns off of everybody that might want to defend themselves against a tyrannical government, which in the 20th century was the leading cause of unnatural death.
Yeah, it could be. But the thing is, there are a lot of good people in the UK doing a lot of good things. And, you know, people like Lou Collins, who is a radio presenter like yourself, and also people like Brian and Mike from the UK column, and people like Michael Doherty, who is kind of out there trying to sue the police and bring people to account. So there are some really good people out there. There's people, you know, getting together and doing a lot of groups, waking up and stuff, and which is great. All of that is good. But from a political perspective of where we can actually have a voice and have a change, is and change the people who are making these decisions and the laws and are in control of the kind of ship, if you like. The no party is there to push the kind of idea of voting for your independent candidate, because they are independent. They're not controlled. You know, they're not funded by a corporation, and they're there to represent you. And that's the key thing here, is that those MPs who represent parties, their first obligation is to represent their party, not their constituent. is a bit like someone who's a solicitor or a barrister who becomes a court officer. Their first obligation is with the court. It's not with you as their client, it's with the court, you know, which is why these all these other ways of saying there's no case to answer or not entering a plea, you know, because then you start to play their game and stuff and entering a plea of innocent rather than not guilty. Anything that really doesn't play their game, you know, and I'll give you an example. I went into one of these make-believe council tax hearings that happens and went in there and said, OK, can you confirm your name? So I got the name of everybody, all the magistrates got the name, made them spell it out, made them feel, you know, this big. And then also said stuff like, can you confirm you're all public servants? You know, and they're all like quite excited. Yeah, we're public servants, we're public servants. Are you? Right, okay. Can you confirm I'm a member of the public? You know, and straight away the atmosphere changed, you know, and this kind of thing. And then you ask, can you confirm what jurisdiction you're under? And then they can't. And then you ask, what rules are we under in this hearing today? And they can't confirm the rules because there are no rules. So they can't say CPR rules apply like they would do in a court of law or a court of record.
Yeah, so if somebody dies, they can resuscitate them. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. There's no rules. It's just unreal. So, and you ask them, what are the rules? And they say, I don't know. What's the next question? My next question was this. Can we change venue if all parties agree? So the response that came back was quite cool, actually. Yes, we can. So I said, well, okay. Well, I'd like to change venue because I'm not happy with having a civil hearing procedure or tribune or whatever you want to call it in a magistrate's court, which is a criminal venue. So it kind of gave me the kind of eebie-jeebies, you know. It's just a bit weird. I don't want to be here. So therefore, can I suggest that we all change venue? Let's go to McDonald's. I'll buy you all a burger. And that's what I said. And literally, two of the magistrates were up for a Big Mac and fries. Yeah, the legal advisor was up for it. But the woman from the council, she didn't get it. And she didn't want to go for a Big Mac and fries. I think she was a vegetarian. But the point was, we could have taken that process into McDonald's. And we could have continued that hearing in McDonald's. Because it's not a court of law. It's not HMCTS business, Her Majesty's Courts and Tribunal. It's between you and the council for a tax which you're obligated to pay via statute. And if you can't pay, then they're going to jail you. And there are no rules. So why would anybody want to go in that arena and when there's no rules? But I went in that arena just to expose it for what it is and to make these people realise you're public servants, and yet you don't know what you're doing. You're enforcing this hypothetical law, which is actually the poor law. You're putting people in jail for a civil debt, and there's no contract. And also, they can't afford to pay it anymore. So what are you going to do? You know, you're just going to put these people in jail, and then more people have got to pay for them to be in jail? It just, none of it makes sense. And, you know, this is one of the things that I'm trying to change.
Again, it doesn't make sense unless you're one of the psychopathic criminal scum that was making money off the senselessness. Like, I think it was Max Egan. I was interviewing him for my documentary, right? And he came up with all these really interesting people about all these really interesting topics, just to give a few bullet points. And I said to him, explain the world in a few bullet points. And he says, psychopaths. Everything about a psychopath is about control, it's about structure and making it hierarchical so that there's something at the top and there's no real accountability anywhere. And psychopaths have created, or currently control at least, almost every single power structure in society. And that is how society is run, psychopathically. And it's a pretty straightforward explanation, I think.
I know Max, and he's not wrong. You know, he's absolutely not wrong. And he says, you know, some good things, and he's on point a lot of the time. And this is the getting to the crux of the matter, is that people like Tony Blair is a good example, a complete psychopath, you know, completely went into war, you know, probably a year before he actually did it, knowing that he was going to do it, and then murdering people for no reason. And, you know, it's kind of made, you know, he's probably, you know, making millions as he goes by now as an ex-prime minister doing talks in all this stuff and peace envoy and all this bollocks, when really he's just an Illuminati puppet, probably. He's part of that whole group and process, and now he's kind of reaping the rewards, when really he should be swinging from the rafters and being held up for treason in The Hague and stuff. But You know, whether that actually materialises remains to be seen. If we get independents in office, if we get independent people in office, that he may well be brought for his crimes.
He was, in fact, brought to trial. He didn't show up to the trial, of course. I think in Malaysia, Judge Alfred Weber actually presiding, and they found Blair and Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld guilty of war crimes. Now, they are now wanted men, like literally wanted men. There's a lot of countries that these guys don't go to anymore because there's no extra because of the extradition, right?
Because it's all about a jurisdiction issue, because that order in that court has been made in that jurisdiction. And then to enforce that, like you said, they need certain relationships, you know, with other countries, and they don't have them, or they do. And that's why, like you said, they're avoiding certain places because they could get picked up. They literally could. But whether they actually get picked up from this jurisdiction, that's the key, and whether we bring them to account for what they've done. And like, you're right, there's no accountability. There's no accountability with the police. There's no accountability with public servants. There's certainly no accountability with MPs or the EU. And this is the key, or the banks. You know, there's no accountability. Or legal wars, you know, it just kind of goes. As soon as you step over that fence, you're kind of protected.
The UK police had killed, I think, maybe 3,000 people from 1993 to 2015 or something of that nature.
I think it's about 1,500 people the last 30 years, and nobody, not one person has been prosecuted or not one police officer has been brought to account for any of the failures. And there's six people in the last year in the West Country died whilst in police custody or shortly after having contact with the police. And some of those were suicides that clearly could have been avoided. And it's because of the police's input and their kind of heavy tactics. Those have happened. There is going to be an inquest. But like all these things, they go to the IPCC, the Independent Police Complaints Commission, which is about as independent as a newborn baby.
And by chance, do they still wear the police uniforms and that, like they do in New Zealand's Independent Police Conduct Authority? You know, we're independent for the police. I can see the badges on your shoulder, boy. I can see your badge. I can see it.
Well, they might as well wear their fancy dress. I think at the end of the day, they don't, but they might as well do, because they're mainly ex-coppers or ex-public servants who are there to protect the establishment and there to protect the people working as the Muppets on the ground floor, if you like. And those are the people that are killing people but not being brought to account. Same with the American police officers who seem to be daily killing somebody in America for no apparent reason, and yet nobody gets brought to account. And until we see justice being done, then, like Prince said in one of his last songs, until there ain't no peace until there's justice, or ain't no justice till ain't no peace, kind of thing. So, you know, and that's the thing, is that we need that justice, you know, because justice needs to be seen to be done. And, you know, justice delayed, rather, is justice denied. And all these things need to be focused on to make sure that there is some remedy out there, whether it's somebody being shot or somebody being unlawfully made bankrupt or unlawfully jailed for not paying a statutory obligation. There needs to be some remedy. There isn't a remedy because the system protects itself, and that's why it doesn't run properly, because you've got a load of monkeys who don't know how to work the organ.
It's been deliberately set up that way so that it can be controlled by afar with a hands-off approach while you reap the benefits, right? If you have commissioned managers running your companies and your estates, as many of the wealthy families of the world do, they don't run their wealth, they don't run their companies, they get commissioned managers to do it. Because at the end of the financial year, if they haven't made a profit with that asset and with that company, that manager does not get paid. Now, assets within a public sphere, in-house services, road cleaning, etc., can be done with commission management while the state, i.e. the people, still owns that and keeps to collect the rewards of actually owning their own in-house services without contracting it out to the mafia or private contractors, the preferred nomenclature for their marketing teams.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's a good point because, you know, in the UK, you know, our utility companies, you know, were privatised off years ago during the Maggie Thatcher era. And, you know, that we now, rather than paying a very small amount to the government for the electric, the gas, the water, for example, nowadays you have to pay hundreds of pounds every month for water, gas and electric. And that all goes to private companies who are, as I mentioned before, emancipations of the state. They're providing the service. They're not liable. You can't sue them. They, you know, they can take legal action against you to recover the debt. But at the end of the day, when they look at their profit margins and their like group who owns them, like the water companies, they earned $2.4 billion last year, and $1.85 billion went back to shareholders who live in Belgium, France and Germany. You know, that's UK water companies. So UK people are paying shareholders in Belgium, France and Germany, rather, for their water supply. That doesn't make sense. Doesn't make out. There's that saying again. Doesn't make sense. And this is the thing, is it doesn't make sense because it, you know, that's...
Unless you live in Belgium or Germany or something.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you, you know, own E.ON and or whatever, the same with the energy companies is the same, you know. All these profits are just siphoned off.
You wouldn't do such a thing to people, right? You wouldn't blatantly lie to them, steal billions of their dollars and leave their people destitute on the streets on purpose or anything like that. If you happened to do that, that would be an accident, right? But these people aren't like you. They're not like me either. They don't have a conscience. They just go... You know what? There's a huge amount of money that can be made here, and the amount of human suffering that's caused over here is just a necessary cost. I can live with it.
Well, it's just a kind of consequence of, from their perspective, of their actions and stuff. And I think
they treat human souls like numbers on a spreadsheet. That's what I'm starting to think about, the emotional attachment to the human race that psychopaths have. Is it okay on the balance books? That's how they look at us, as a profitable piece of livestock.
Yeah, we're cattle, we're assets, we're statistics. But I think one of the key things is that people are waking up now, and they're waking up because, you know, media is now social and not more controlled, so we can get our news rather than from Facebook stuff and social media, rather than having to go to kind of national press, which is controlled. And I think that fundamentally people are getting the idea of what you allow is what will continue, and that really is really driving home now, and people are making a stand. And this is where the poll tax years, you know, 25 years ago or whatever, when poll tax was being enforced and people took a stand, and they poll tax riots in London, and Margaret Thatcher had to resign, and there was riots, you know, because people said, oh, I'm not paying this shit anymore, you know, and they rebranded it as council tax, tweaked the legislation, and they've been getting away for it for the last 23 years. But I think council tax days is numbered now, and it's only a matter of time where you get enough people to not pay their council tax or not pay their water bill or not pay their TV licence, and then the whole kind of system collapses upon itself because it can't sustain itself. And I think eventually we're going to reach a tipping point. I think eventually there's going to be another financial collapse, which you mentioned earlier, and we'll have one of these situations where everybody will run to the bank to try and get their money, and then they'll realise that only the bank holds about 8% of the real actual money that exists. And so when everybody tries to get their money at the same time, they won't be able to. And the people that will be the governments, who will take it out to pay the national debt. And national debt to whom? And that's the big question. Who do we owe the national debt to? Well, it's the Bank of International Settlements, when it boils down to it, which is a lot of bullshit at the end of the day. And they're kind of big piggy bank. That's the way I look at it. It's their big piggy bank, and they take and give away and all that stuff, and it just in and out. Thank you very much.
I always think about this idea. What is the new power structure of Europe going to look like if Britain is not part of the EU? You talked about Merkel and others taking the centre stage when it comes to this kind of thing, right? Do you see sort of a... Well, I know that the end goal is to have a number of different super states, and I know that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is more or less a wax-on, wax-off of the European Economic Union, which they're going to then turn into the Oceanic Union for all of us little guppies down here in the South fucking Pacific, so that we could be amalgamated into a global superstructure with United Nations and a global surveillance system and a world police and everything like that. I know this. And I know that there's a central banking system that they want to implement as well, that controls all and regulates all the currencies every year, because they'll control all the currencies. And they practically already do, apart from like in Iran and North Korea that don't have Rothschild-controlled banks. Now, what's interesting about those two countries is the only two countries that get described as really terrible terrorist states that are like really arming themselves to protect themselves from something. And what could they fucking possibly be protecting themselves from? Maybe a global banking cartel that's a group of pedophile, Satanist, human trafficking, evil, warmongering, criminal, violent, genocidal, sociopathic scum? Maybe?
Israel?
Yeah, that too. You see, that's how it goes, ladies and gentlemen. It's just basically psychopaths versus psychopaths. Have you noticed this? Right? All the people that get into the power structure of like one country versus the other, it's just two crazy, crazy people with huge freaking egos that don't care about any of their own people and only about their own ego and just want to kill everything that tries to insult them. Ugh. God, mate, it reminds me a lot of myself. Now, I think that...
Well, yeah, you're right about the women's lib coming in, you know, with Merkel and May and maybe Clinton and stuff. You know, maybe they're going to get together and have a little bit of a coffee morning and stuff and have a little bit of a chin wag. But I don't know, maybe that's deliberate. Like it was, you know, the last three prime ministers that we've had have all been Scottish. You know, Cameron, Brown, Blair... You know, and there's that Scottish link as well. So it's some strange stuff going on, that's for sure. But I don't know, the Simpsons seem to tell us that Trump's going to be the president of the United States. So if you follow the Simpsons kind of predictions and stuff, then, you know, they're saying that Trump's going to get in. So I don't know, maybe Trump might be a good thing, because it seems to me that they want Hillary at all costs, especially after what she's just... been through with her email leak and stuff.
I don't know. I've got some issue with the whole election process, because, like, as we mentioned before about that very healthy and very essential jaded cynicism nougat that needed to be built up like a precious gallstone in the gallbladder of humanity over a period of time, you know, layer upon layer of cynicism, that so that you just can't be bullshit anymore. And I'm thinking about this concept that comes around every election season. Doesn't matter whose election season, doesn't matter who's up for election. It's, oh, well, I've got to choose the lesser of two evils. Now, when was the last time that that approach involved the electing somebody who was anyway good at all? No.
Well, exactly. And this is the whole point about, you know, the electoral process, whichever country you're in, it always seems to boil down to you're given to vote for one of two options. Like in the UK, it's normally Conservative Labour. In America, it's Democrats versus Republicans. And each kind of country has this kind of power struggle where there's two major parties which are at the top. And it's always this kind of, this party won, now this party won. And this is the problem, is that what you need is something like Podemos, which, like in Spain, which is this anti-austerity party, which has come out of nowhere in the last 4 or 5 years, which has broken through now, is like going to be the biggest party in Spain and maybe take over next time. Which is amazing to come out of nowhere in the last 5 years, because they've got their act together and they've formed something that people can really get behind and support. But it's still a party, and still it can still be controlled, it can still be corrupted, and the people are still there voting for a party. And like I said earlier, Parliament wasn't built for parties, wasn't intended for parties. It was meant for 400 and odd independent candidates to represent their constituencies independently, so that they weren't swayed by what somebody else was voting. They weren't swayed because somebody had donated a load of money to their campaign or a company had. They were voting for what they believed for the intention and their best interests of the people that they were representing. And this is the problem, is that that conversation in politics has never changed. You never see this conversation on Newsnight or a politics programme. Nobody ever talks about the independent vote. It's always party politics. And as long as they have party politics, they have control, because each party is controlled. So even if a party like Podemos in Spain comes out of nowhere, it can be infiltrated. It can be taken over eventually. Or everybody is corrupt. because everybody's got a price. And this is one of the great things that taught me about money was going through bankruptcy, was realizing money isn't real. It's just credit notes, it's beer tokens, it's food vouchers, or whatever you want to turn it into. And that's all it is. And might help you in your little game of life, you know, the more cash availability you have. But, you know, I once asked one of the big high street banks, oh, you know, you owe us 50 grand, Danny. You've personally guaranteed this bank loan. Well, I wrote to them and said, I'll pay it back, no problem. Provided you can give me evidence that that money that you have lent me has got value. And because it's credit, it's not got any value because I'm the only one who can pay it back because I'm the one who borrowed it. I'm the one who applied my sign of nature, my signature, to the I'll borrow some money that you're going to generate out of fresh air. So if you want me to pay that back, give me some proof that it's actually got some value. And when they can't provide that proof, that's when they write it off. And that's what they did with me. This was 2 weeks before I went bankrupt. They wrote to me and said, forget it, we've written it off. And then even though the official ombudsman, my bankruptcy, went back to them and said, oh, he's been made bankrupt anyway. And they went, don't worry, we wrote it off because he asked if it had value. And we can't prove it's got any value, so we'd rather not answer his question. And these are the things is that people can ask some real simple questions when it's about their council tax, or their water supply, or their TV license, or their bank, or their money, where it's come from. And you can really start to kind of dig some holes and you know, go down the rabbit hole. And when you do, you know, you find out that most of it's empty and, you know, there's nothing there. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. And once you get past that, the world's your oyster.
There's an old saying, plata o plomo. It means silver or lead. That's the saying. If you want to do good in this world and you get really successful at it, theory goes that sooner or later, because the elite have been in control of society for a very long time and because they've anticipated that many people will resist in many different unforeseen impossible ways, they know that as soon as somebody gets to a certain level of success, they become a real credible threat and then they need to be given the offer of silver or lead. Now, it's when you are given that offer and you say, I'd rather take the lead than take any money from you. That's when you know you're free. And that's when you also know that your days, you know, become rather fucking limited. But, you know, it's great while it lasts.
Yeah, well, when you said the lead, I was thinking, I thought you meant a bullet, which you clearly kind of do. You know, so eventually that's, you know, like you said, people like JFK and stuff, you know, they become a threat to the establishment. And the first thing that JFK wanted to do and tried to do with Executive Order 101 or whatever it was to try and overturn who was in control of the money supply. He was trying to make the government in control of the money supply. And that's what that executive order was. And that's as soon as he was shot, that was reversed. And that's a key lesson to learn right there. Somebody got so close that he got voted in as president of the United States and then was there long enough to put that executive order in. But as soon as he did, you know, he was taken out.
I believe it was Presidential Order 1110 that was to abolish the Federal Reserve and put the issuance of currency under the US Treasury. And the very next was PDD 1111, which was to abolish the CIA, which at that time and currently to this day includes private funding.
Well, there you go. And this is the thing, is that he clearly got into that position where he became a real big threat to them, and then that's why they took him out and appointed somebody else, some other patsy, and got them to undo what he had done to make sure that they were still in control of those things. And this, you know, and no doubt they'll do everything they can to protect their way of life, their system, like anything does, like the Earth, Gaia does itself. You know, it protects itself, and people like say, "Oh, we're trying to save the Earth." It's like, it's just insane, you know.
I love what George Carlin said about that. The Earth isn't going anywhere. We are.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And this is the thing, is that I've been a big believer in the Gaia theory for a long time. The fact that the whole world is one living, breathing organism. And in fact, my daughter has got Gaia as a middle name. And my kind of what I'm doing under my private detective stroke law practice, what I'm doing now, or non-practicing lawyer or paralegal or whatever I am, is called Gaia Law, you know, because we're all under this natural law and stuff, and, you know, and that's what people need to realise, that we're all under that same law, fundamentally.
Yeah, you could popularise it, make a TV show called Gaia in the Middle.
Maybe. Well, that would be a woman, because obviously Gaia is a woman.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I think it's a macroorganism thing. Okay, so a cell in the body has a very similar structure to the Earth or other planetoids that we can see out in the void. So I'm starting to think that it's simply organisms of scale, that the galaxy itself is indeed a single cell of a larger organism, and that larger organism is a single cell of an even larger organism. Just like each cell in my body is actually made up of all of these other independent organisms that live within it and so on and so forth, infinitely down the strain, infinitely up the strain. And what is the meaning of life then if life is living on infinite playing fields? It means that whatever fucking playing field you're on is important to the structure of the whole universe. And if you don't fulfill your own personal, individual destiny, the universe misses out because of you!
Wow, we best all do our bit then, eh?
Yeah, it's like, what are you waiting for, bro?
This is the thing, is that, you know, I think we're all trying to do our bit one way or the other, and, you know, somehow we need to come together as a political voice, you know, and it certainly won't be to support a party. So, you know, there's another movement which has kind of kick-started earlier this year called Free Parliament, and it's doing the very same thing that we're trying to do, but they're trying to fund the independent candidates. So it's called freeparliament.org.uk. It's worth looking at on the web, and they're basically saying, if you want to stand as an independent candidate, if you've got what it takes kind of thing and we think you're good enough, we'll give you 10 grand to stand. Because that's the thing, is that to stand as an MP becomes an elitist kind of thing, you know, because you need 500 quid and you need 100 people to sign the electoral register and say you're a good person to stand and all that stuff. So there's this little hurdles that they put there, but I think more and more people are waking up to the fact that I want to vote, my vote counts. You know, I don't want to vote for one of these parties that seem to be internally combusting, you know, or keeping stabbing themselves and fighting each other, when really they need to be talking about the real issues and getting down to business, because they're there to represent the people in public office and make proper big decisions that affect all of us, whether it's to go to war or to put taxes up or take over the banks or get rid of the CSA or get rid of social services or whatever it's going to be, to really kind of drastically change things. But the people who don't want things to be changed, they want you to vote for a party, which is why the media is controlled, the mainstream media is all in their pocket, you know, and that's why the people that are in those hamster wheels don't get told anything else, you know. I could never go on Newsnight or Question Time. I'd love to, yeah, but I wouldn't be given that kind of platform to talk about independent vote or no party or taking over the banks and fiscal policy, monetary policy, or, you know, any of this stuff, because they wouldn't even allow it. You know, things like that are edited anyway. They're not live, so it's not live broadcasting. And so it's a bit of a kind of cop-out, really. And, you know, I think this is the thing, is that we need to really kind of change our perspective on voting for political parties and voting for independents. And then we've got other people who don't vote at all. And I think if we got half of the people who don't vote to actually get out and vote for independents, the independents would have a field day and walk it.
They could do.
There's so many no voters out there.
Well, I think that as well, sometimes I struggle because I'm a very empathic person, you know, I feel people's pain and I think about it a lot, how much people are suffering out there, right? And I think to myself, if I was in that position where I've been shafted my whole life and I have to work 60, 70 hours a week and I've got to raise my kids and everything like that and I've got nothing, and the only way I'm capable of really having any enjoyment in my life is when I come home at the end of the day, open a beer and have a ciggy and invite some of my mates around and have a few laughs and then watch a game, you know? And you kind of think about this, that sounds to me like a miserable, horrible existence. And yet to others, this is the reality, and they say this phrase that I hear people utter so often, and I wish I heard it so much less. That's life. As if it is a fact that you cannot change, and this powerlessness.
Yeah, you're spot on, because this is the thing. People do feel powerless and they think, oh, I can't do anything about it. How can I make a difference? You know, my vote's not going to count. If voting, you know, changed anything, they make it illegal, all that kind of stuff. And I don't. It's not that I don't get that perspective. I do, like you do, you know, and people come home, they want to spend time with their family, or they want to crush out with their mates, or crush out in front of the sofa and play kind of mind games or whatever on their consoles and stuff, and just spend all the evening on Facebook or watching Big Brother, whatever. Just whatever puts them into some kind of other reality so that they can have chill out time before they have to go and relive the whole process again the next day. And this is the thing, is that I was, in a way, lucky enough to kind of step out of that cycle, step out of that kind of hamster wheel, and then look at everything around me, and everything kind of disappeared. My relationship, my house almost disappeared. My child was taken away from me. My businesses were stripped from me. Everything that I had was stripped bare. And then I was forced to fight for it all without a solicitor, without a lawyer, and to do it all myself and figure up with a way, a plan to kind of get my life back on track. Otherwise, I'd have been on the street. And now I'm in a position where during all that time, I've learnt loads and helped people and kept everything. And I've kind of got more now than I had then, which is amazing. But at the same time, it's only because I could see things that were coming around the corner and I could prepare for them, you know, and like when setting up the trust, otherwise they would have took my house, or paying a quid for my mortgage, otherwise they would have took my house. You know, all these kind of things would have had a drastic effect on me, and that's why people need to educate themselves before they kind of step over the precipice, so that they understand that there's no kind of netting to catch them or anything.
Now, the educate side of things, I mean, you know how the Muslim debate's going up real huge now? People are like, oh, the Muslims are going to kill us. Oh, they're gonna... You know, it's like, yeah, really, the Muslims that got shipped into your country via the George Soros Foundation, who works for the globalist kingpins, who also control your government, who then gave them all the ability to live there and everything like that, so that they can foment white race wars and make everybody really uppity at each other, so that there's no social cohesion in the community, so that you're all fighting each other instead of the people that are actually fucking your society up, right? So I'm just kind of sitting here going like, okay, whoa, what's the problem here? What's the problem here? Education's the problem, isn't it? Because if you don't like somebody because you don't understand them, the way to solve that is to educate that person, right? And the same is true for people who come from the Middle East to come and live in the West as well. If they're not properly educated, hey, you do realize you're in this society now. No, that's not the kind of behavior that's just not the way we do things, bro, okay? You know?
Okay, so again, it's culture, it's jurisdiction. The rules are different. You move to a different country, you've got to abide by their rules and their culture, and that same applies to us. If we move out to the Middle East, we'd have to do the same. And that's why everything is all about education and awareness and making people understand, you know, how things work in other countries and stuff. You know, I was nearly arrested in the States years ago for using somebody else's driving license for trying to get into a bar. You know, I was 25 at the time, but I forgot my passport. In America, when you go into a bar, you need your ID, especially when you're me and you've got a bit of a younger face. And you're only 5'6". But what I didn't realise at the time when I was using that ID, that on American driving licence, it has your height. So even though the guy actually looked like me and he was almost let me in, he just turned around and said, you're not 6'2". You know, so I was nowhere I was getting in. But using somebody else's ID in America is like a federal offence and stuff. And I was going to be locked up unless I drove back to the hotel 5 miles up the road and went and got my passport, which is... thankfully what the copper allowed me to do. So this is the thing, is that, you know, there's, I suppose you've got to respect where you live and their laws and their jurisdiction and their cultures, and like you said, it's all about education and lack of understanding, which again is kind of probably deliberate.
It's been deliberately fomented, because if you're really angry with the people who live in your neighbourhood, you don't worry about the absentee landlords that own half of that neighbourhood. Now, that joke regarding that driver's licence with the height on it, right? It was a mama joke. What was it? Your mum was so short, you could see her feet on her driver's licence.
I actually got off a speeding ticket once because the copper said to me, have you got a clean driving license? And I said, no, I think it's got some chewing gum stuck on it. Yeah, that went down well, and I got off. I've got loads of jokes, especially like my mate was caught masturbating in public, and then when he went to court, he got off.
We went to court without any pants on, and he got off by reason of insanity, and the judge just said, I can clearly see you're nuts.
Turn into the comedy hour at the end.
Well, no, it's the comedy 15 minutes, you know, everybody gets 15.
Is that where we are in the last 15 minutes?
No, I just made it up, cunt.
So is there any other topics that you want to discuss since it's 4:45 in the morning?
Yeah, okay, so if we've got like 15 minutes, is there anything that you've done in this movement that you kind of, let's just say you haven't really gotten the chance to actually talk about it, has been something like really interesting and really kind of freaky, maybe scared you out a little bit, that you don't exactly know how to explain it to people? You know how some of that sort of shit happens, but you know, just yeah. let that sit in your brain for just a second here, because I wanted to talk about this this global syndicate sort of issue. There's so many people working in their own little ways on little solutions, etc. And I think this is actually the way to go about it, because it's never a group of people that seem to discover these really brilliant little things over here. It's usually the individual who does. You know, Rutherford split the atom, Einstein discovered relativity, Tesla developed a wirelessly transmittable electricity. So you think about this, how an individual contributes to the whole, and indeed you realize that the whole is valueless without the individual, because it's the only thing that actually exists. Like, have you ever touched a forest versus have you ever touched a tree? The forest doesn't exist. It's a mental abstraction. The only thing that actually exists in the forest is all of these many different trees, the dirt, and all of these composites. But we come up with these ideas to group everything together so that we can understand it and just put it in a little box so that we don't have to continue to try and understand it and dig any further into it. And this is where we find ourselves in the bulk of society and the media that I've seen coming out, even the bulk of the alternative media, that ain't pushing the envelope here. Does it make you feel uncomfortable? No? Well, then it's probably not that big a revelation to you, is it? That kind of thing. That's what I'm after. I'm after some real fucking discomfort, because I think that the only thing that makes muscle waste away and become limp noodle nothingness is doing nothing with it.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you can have a great idea and stuff, but if you do nothing with that idea, it just stays as an idea. And, you know, you can talk about doing stuff, you know, until the cows come home, but until you actually do it, you're not going to actually change anything. And yeah, there's some great people around there. I had a Skype call a few months ago with Ken O'Keefe. And he's trying to do that global citizenship thing, you know, where you become a global citizen. So you renounce your citizenship from wherever you are and you become a global citizen. You know, and then you're in this even bigger umbrella, and we're stepping out of that jurisdiction, if you like, of being controlled from wherever you are and stepping into this, hey, I'm with everybody else kind of thing, which is a kind of a neat idea. But practically doing it, legally doing it, there's all holes to problems, you know, and issues and stuff getting that off the ground. And no matter how good an idea it is, it's always going to be suppressed by the national media and never going to take you seriously. They're never going to get it out there. So it comes down to sharing YouTube clips on Facebook and Twitter. And it's like, well, are we really going to have some kind of revolution via social media while we're all stuck at home or all on our tablets or phones sharing links to say, hey, let's do this, watch this, you know, everything's fucked up, and well, hold on a minute, we know that, and is it really going to make a difference? Are you really going to make a difference by sharing this shit or watching this shit? You know, and I sit there and waste enough time doing that shit and thinking, I'm wasting time. I need to be getting out there, you know, waking people up. That's what I try and do every day, wherever I speak to on the phone or meet them in the shop or whatever, talk to people, just say, you know, this is who I am, this is what I do. And I just find that that's more engaging, really, than kind of preaching to the converted, if you like, to the people who are already on my Facebook, who are already in these circles, who are already sharing the same shit and clicking like. Is it really making a fundamental difference? we might as well be all been watching football or baseball or EastEnders. Because as far as they're concerned, we're all occupied and we're not doing anything really constructive that's really making a fundamental difference. And that's really what I'm trying to do, is do stuff, you know, that actually blows a hole in not paying your water bill or not paying your council tax or whatever it is, and also influencing the way that you vote, you know, and deciding, hey, I'm not going to vote for a corporation, I'm not going to vote for a party, I'm not going to vote for some patsy who's controlled, I'm going to vote for John down the street because he's an independent candidate and I know him and I can trust him and I know that he's going to represent my voice properly. And that's really where, fundamentally what it boils down to, whether it's a local councillor or your MP or MEP or even the next president of the United States. It should be somebody who's independent. And I think that's what the No Party is there for, and like this anonymous non-legal entity that can't be controlled. So, you know, a drug baron from Colombia could fund us billions and nobody could do shit about it because we're not controlled. We're not in their system. We're not registered with them. We're not under their jurisdiction. And that's why Anonymous is so good, because it's a similar vein. And that's really what, to get round party politics and get round that changing the mindset and changing the rules, or at least putting better rules, gatekeepers in there, people who tweak the decisions, tweak the laws, and are there to represent people and not corporations and not banks. And that's fundamentally where I'm striving towards, and I'll be standing in the next election in Plymouth as an independent candidate, and so will people like Michael Doherty and a host of other people up and down the country, and, you know, wearing black and white and a no party kind of banner to get people in their mindset, don't vote for a party because you're just going to get more of the same. Nothing fundamental will change. Sorry, I rabbited on a bit.
No, that's good. That's good, because it actually kind of encapsulates a great point that I've tried to convey to my listeners as well. A lot of radio show hosts try to wake people up. I don't. I'm uninterested in waking people up. If you're awake already, that's how you'll find the show. I'm here to activate people. The best compliment that you can give me as a talk radio show host is to stop listening to my show and start doing something independent to help humanity on your own, in your own way, of your own accord, without anybody's help. That is how you can really repay the people who have laid down years of work, their lifetimes in some cases, to create this future for us. You know, 10, 20 years ago, in the pre-9/11 era, was there a fucking truth movement? No. Even though there have been people who have been working for 40, 50 years doing circuits, writing books and doing presentations and selling DVDs and things like that, they laid the groundwork for us. And the people who run this network, the people who created the online sort of talk radio circuit and the truth movement kind of thing, I owe much of what I have to all of those people who, in large cases, I've never met. Don't even know the names of these nameless, faceless people who have given everything so that I can just have a little something. That's a great obligation I believe all of us have in the truth movement. All of us have as citizens. All of us as free human beings have. It comes from this old Greek saying that the idea is to plant a tree whose shade you know you will never get to sit underneath. Danny Bamping has been my very special guest. NoParty.co, NoParty.co, ladies and gentlemen, is the website for that. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast and a listener-supported network, so go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and AmericanFreedomRadio.com, respectively. Click those donate banners and support the kind of broadcasting that we're doing. And if you like a new TV format, leave a comment, give us a like, and subscribe on YouTube as well. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.